Ann, and I'm here to talk about some of the aspects of my journey that brought me to the Sufi path. I would say there were three key things that opened up the door to the unseen for me, and they were an intense longing, a sweet sorrow, and a sincere intention, and it was to go home. From the time I was a child, everything that I thought or felt or was interested in was how was I going to get home. Didn't exactly know what that was, but I knew that this reality that most of us live in on a day-to-day basis was not home for me. And my journey led me many places. But mainly it led me within. And I found that through this longing, this sorrow, and this sincere intention, everything that I needed was given to make my journey home. And it came from all kinds of places and people, and even things helped. And it created something within me so that I could see what was needed for my journey. And I had also studied something very specific for many, many years that helped with the knowledge part. It was a path of truth. So God as truth, but yet within was this love that was always there, that was always kind of pushing me, making me look deeper at what this truth was that was being presented to me. And I guess when I originally thought about speaking about this, it was so that for some of you who don't have a particular path that you are on, that for me, everything came from within. And it was like intuition in a way. The prayer that I used for many, many years was given to me. It wasn't from a book or from a tradition. And it came actually when I was sitting in a movie called E.T. And this particular part of the movie, the little creature says, E.T. phone home. And I'm sitting in the movie going, I'm going to start calling. I'll call. You know, they made some contraptions so that E.T. could call home. But this is when I started to pray, and I would sit with a sincere intention, and I would sit and I would say, Grandfather, Great Spirit, Grandmother, Great Mystery, hear my voice. I send my voice to you. I am here. I am you. And I would just sit and patiently wait for the moment that I called when the Spirit of Truth would come. And I would just sit and wait. No expectation, but just knew because of this longing that I had, that if I could just create some sort of space within myself, some dimension within myself, if I could become empty, silent, then this grace, this presence would come it wasn't a maybe, or wouldn't it be nice? I just knew. So I sat this way for a long time. And I had my studies. And in my studies, we had a concept that you had a human disposition, but there was also this perfect divine self. So I would do what I guess you would call virtue work, where I thought, you know, God was purity and God was truth and God was wisdom and God was love and God was strength and God was power and God was all of, you know, had all of these qualities and attributes. So I would try to emulate these. And any time I found myself being petty or jealous or backbiting, you know, I could say, you know, is God any of these things? And obviously the answer would become no. So things like, you know, jealousy and envy or whatever, you know, they eventually kind of went their own way. And in this process, you start to become empty. And it was a long journey for me. You know, it didn't happen in a year or 2 years. We're talking many, many, many years of kind of trying to figure out how could I get home, you know, using many different kinds of ways that, you know, would come into my experience. And then a time came when it felt like home was becoming near. You know, it wasn't really far away anymore. And I kind of reached this wall where I didn't think I could figure out any longer how I was going to get home. I felt like it just really needed to be just this really deep dive within myself. And this is when I started to meditate, because I thought it would remove all of these barriers and obstacles that we put in our way, whether we wish to or not. And slowly, you know, I started to formulate what was meditation and, you know, what do you do? And, you know, so again, I went within and thought about, okay, what is this idea called meditation? And eventually I decided to make a commitment to I was going to meditate. And so I sat in a chair and just sat. But within that longing and that sincere intention and the sorrow that was just always there, something happened, and almost within an instant, I was home. It was an experience that felt premortal. It was really very old and very ancient. And I could smell it and feel it. And with this, obviously, came a tremendous, tremendous energy. Which I wasn't expecting at all. And this was sort of the beginning of my journey in God, with God, where an intimacy was created, a space, a dimension was created within, where the silence is. So I didn't really know what home was when I started my journey. But now I know it's an emptiness and a silence that I live in now. where there's presence, a grace that's always there. And when I originally, you know, was going to speak about this, I thought there were going to be just a few people and we could have some dialogue or discussion, so that for me, each one of us has a way home, and that perhaps you've been given inklings of what that is, but for some reason you put them aside and you don't pay attention to them. Like when I tell people that the mantra that I used, and I mean, I didn't even know what mantras were when I was using this, was at a time when I started to have visions. And before I would start to have a vision, a song from my childhood would come. And it would usually be one verse. And one of the ones was James Brown, and it was, "I Feel Good." And I would just, it would just start up, and it would be James Brown singing, "I Feel Good." And I don't know if all of you know who James Brown is, but I grew up in the South with soul music, and he sang soul music. Or another time it would be, "Open up your heart and let the sun shine in." And it would just repeat itself and repeat itself. And, you know, my breath would change and I would start to feel myself just slipping away until I was gone. And it sounds ridiculous, but that's what worked for me. So I sometimes wonder if there isn't a song or songs in all of our hearts that we've actually been wanting to sing that really have a deep, deep meaning for us. I wanted to open my heart and let the sun shine in, so that's what I sang. And it was all of the time, all of the time. And there were many, many of these songs, and every time one of these songs would come, it was during a time when I would say it was setting my soul free. And it was an experience that I was having where, when these visions first started to come, I was a very small bird and I was in a bird cage. And it was a very plain bird cage. But as this unfolding started to happen, the cage started to become really ornate. Rooms were added, jeweled curtains, doors, many places to eat. It was just this huge, elaborate thing after a while. And during this experience, these songs would come. And then after I would go into this really sort of peaceful place, I was shown the things that still bound me to this reality. And, you know, agreements were made. You know, are you willing to give this up or not? And as I would say yes, finally, you know, the birdcage started to get a little simpler again. And at one time I was this really huge, beautiful bird, you know. But then, you know, Tweety Bird started coming back again. And, you know, the cage became simpler and, you know, the door would open and I could start to fly away, but I didn't go very far in the beginning because it, you know, there were some fearful qualities to all of this. It was a very beautiful experience, but when you're being shown all the things that bind you and that have to go, and it's pretty much everything, you know, you're sort of going, "But that's very dear to me. I cherish that." And they're going, "It either goes or you stay in this cage." So the door opened and I would fly away, and I'd come back and I'd have my, you know, little dish of water and food, and I was really happy. And then one day I flew, I came back and the cage was closed. And I was told I could no longer live in this cage, and my sustenance was not in this cage. So I hung onto this cage, you know, for dear life on the outside going, this isn't what I had in mind when I thought about home, but okay. And then I'd fly thinking, okay, I'll find sustenance somewhere else, and there was none. And one day I flew back and the cage was gone, and I was told that I was free and I could fly now. And I didn't really know what this meant. But yet I know I was confused, and it was a bit bewildering because I was really free. And it wasn't anything like I thought it was going to be. I mean, you have these concepts about what freedom is, you know, what love is, what God is, and, you know, they just get dismantled along the way. So my soul was free, but I was still very much aware of all of the things that still bound me to this reality. And I knew they had to go as well. So agreements were made, and, you know, I had been so committed to realizing the truth my whole life that I thought, okay, I'll venture into this territory as well. And it, you know, took many different forms, and, you know, at some point, you know, you're giving everything away or everything's being taken. And you are pretty much left, you know, with nothing except this love that you have for God. And then eventually, you know, that goes. You know, your concept of God is a concept. And in these experiences, you are shown, you know, other realities. So as you're, you know, kissing your concepts goodbye, they're actually getting replaced with something else in a way for a while. So, you know, the truth is changing, and your idea of love is changing, and your idea of God is changing. But there was always something within that was always bringing up whatever needed to go, you know. And in the beginning, it was replaced with something else until, you know, at some point there was nothing left. And you live in a silent, empty place. So I guess it was this intention and this sorrow and this longing that kind of led me through the whole journey. It motivated me, you know, anytime I would start to sit comfortably someplace, and then that voice would come, is this looking like reality to you? Is this spirit? Okay, you've got a home and nice clothes and a good job, but, you know, is that what this is all about? You know, so there was always something that, you know, anytime I would start to get comfortable somewhere, it would, you know, move me on. And I would say, anytime, you know, I would add something to my practice, it always came from within, and it seemed very much a part of who I really was. And it's like with the example of prayer. It just seems so right that you just sit and you patiently wait, you know, for the grace to come or God to come, what, you know, whatever you want to call it. And the sorrow, it was never, you know, a depression or anything like that. It was just this really sweet sorrow that was always present, always letting me know in a way that it was okay to keep moving. Because at times you're like, you know, can I really survive if I'm like this empty? You know, how do you get up in the morning and go to work and do all your daily doings when you see it all being dismantled in front of you? But at some point, you actually see this turning, and it just starts to slip away all on its own. And you become comfortable with the idea that of this turning away from the world and going within yourself. The scariness of it starts to go away. And, you know, your commitment, you know, to realizing, you know, what is real, it helps in the whole process. And then you reach this place where there's just this pull that you don't actually do anything anymore. Because up to this point, you're pretty much doing, you know, you think you're in control, and I'm the one sitting in meditation, and I'm the one praying. And then there comes a moment when there's just this tremendous pull. Some sort of space gets created within you, like a vortex or something. And you're just pulled by this tremendous force called love. And you go into such depths of understanding of who you actually are, what we all actually are. And then your sense of yourself as Lynn or whoever, it slips away. And you start to lose your identity as yourself, as a individual that you call by a certain name. And you start to understand that, you know, we are all one and the same. And we have a name that we recognize each other by, but in the wholeness, we are really all one and the same. And we sit in this wonderful state of emptiness and peace. That's where we all actually live, whether you have an awareness of it or not. And it is just an awareness, like it's present. But it's as if you have to say, yes, I would like to know what this state, this natural state of being is, that, you know, this pure state of being, this blissful state of being. You know, what is this empty and silent, you know, that people keep telling me about? It's, you know, like for me, it was just a longing for it. And I don't know how it is, you know, for other people. And I called it home. Other people call it something else. But it's a turning within. It isn't out here, and it isn't in books, and you can have a guide in this reality that can help you find your way. But there is a guide within you. A teacher within you, if you'll just turn within. And if you learn to listen to what is being given, it is almost as if there really is a book of instructions in a way. If you do this, then this will come. And if you do this, this will come. If you're willing to give up some of the things that you cherish and you find dear, but are of this world, great gifts come when you make these decisions to do this. But it is a decision that you seem to have to make. You seem to have to say yes to it. And I guess, you know, be willing to, when the activity starts, to be willing to go into whatever comes. And sometimes for me it was really scary. I mean, when someone uses the word annihilate, you're not really sure what that means until the first onslaught hits you and the dismantling begins. And, you know, you see that everything that you thought yourself to be is pretty much not true. We are so much more than what we think we are. And when you start to see the light that comes, and you know that you are part of that light, you know, and it comes into your heart and it just radiates, and you start to see differently and hear differently and taste differently. And it's just change after change after change. And it seems to come, you know, when you're ready. I mean, I would have, you know, breaks for short times when I thought I just can't handle any more of this. I'm perfectly happy sitting right here where I am. I don't need to go any deeper into one more concept or, you know, I just love knowing myself the way I am in this moment. And, you know, then you would find out that what you were loving is still not the truth. So a little bit more would be taken, or you would give a little more. And, you know, they speak about some of the things that, you know, are given. And it's a surrender. And for me, it embraced me, the surrender. And I went kicking and fighting. I mean, it was a real struggle for me. And maybe for some people it's very easy. But it was so confusing and so not like what I thought surrender to be. No one can describe what nothing is, where you're just so totally empty that anytime anything comes in, you know that the source that it's coming from is not any identity that you used to be. And the presence is just there. And it guides you then. And I still have lots of moments where Lynn appears on the scene still and starts mucking with everything, because she gets scared that she's going to have to sit in this chair, and she thought she was going to have a few people in the room and we were going to have this nice little discussion. And now I'm sort of giving a more formal talk about, you know, aspects of my journey. So you're having to you know, remember an I that you're not so familiar with anymore, and you're having to remember. And earlier this morning when Pirzia was speaking, I had a remembrance as to why I'm here, because for me, and I don't know how it is for other people, that I was taken into such a depth that at one point I thought, there's no way I'm coming back this time. I'm just way too far gone. That, you know, this reality had just slipped so far away from me. And you find yourself back in this reality, dazed and confused. And it, when he was speaking, it reminded me of one of the agreements that I had made in my journey. And it was that I had an experience with compassion where I could look into people's heart and I could see the suffering that was there. And it was like they were speaking to me as if they were fine, but their heart was just weeping and weeping. And I could see that the longing, that same sorrow was there. And it just hurt so bad to see this suffering. And my heart just kept expanding and imploding and exploding. And I was like, okay, enough, enough, enough. And an agreement was made that, you know, I would try to help people home. You know, I would try to sit in what has been shown to me and what I've realized. That I would try to stay empty and still and silent so that perhaps someone could recognize that there is this dimension that you can be in. It is a reality, and it is a reality here. And it was nice for me when I had this remembrance, because you forget a lot of things, a lot of what goes on. And you sometimes wonder, you know, what am I doing here? You know, because it doesn't seem like you're being of any use, or it's like you're just hanging out in this reality, you know, kind of, why? So, you know, I try to speak about a potential, a possibility that is there for everyone. We are the wholeness of God. And for me, when one person knows the reality, then everyone must know the reality, because we are all one in the same. And it's a remembering. The most interesting thing for me about my experiences is that all I had to do was remember. It was almost as if this whole scenario had already been played before. You know, leaving home, taking myself out on the horizon, coming back in on myself, over again and over again and over again. And then once I started to remember, everything just started falling away. And it seems to be that perhaps we set up obstacles so that we can't remember. We get very busy in our daily lives and don't take, you know, or the remembrance starts to come, but it it does something to you that scares you. You know, you're not familiar enough with it anymore. And it, because at times you get a sense like you're on the edge of something, like there's a certain quality of craziness to this remembering sometimes. And I had about, you know, a year and a half or 2 years where there, you know, it was kind of do not disturb, because you didn't really want anyone seeing you in the state that you're in, because you felt that they would perhaps perceive you as being crazy. Crazy in love with God. And we don't know too much about that anymore in this culture. You know, a lot of us live very far away from the God that's within. I mean, we may live very close to the one that our religion, you know, has given us, or that our family has given us. But the true God that lives in each one of us, and you can call it any name you want. I mean, you can call it God, Allah, Buddha, you know. That oneness that is, you know, it lives inside of all of us as us. It's you. So for me, it was those three key things: the intention, the sorrow, and the longing. And I don't know if you all have this in your heart as well. I'm assuming you do, or you maybe wouldn't be here sitting in these chairs at a Sufi gathering. So I don't know, does anyone have any questions?
I'd like to know about when you got involved in the Sufism, like how that happened.
I had a... Oh, she's asking me how I got involved in Sufism, how all of this relates, I guess, to Sufism. Is that what you're asking?
Well, I know you were in a particular, you know, branch of Sufism that I don't know much about, mm-hmm. and so if you could tell me something about
it. Yeah. Well, I had a mystical experience a few years ago. Well, more than a few now. And I was brought into the silence. And there's a particular Sufi path. And I actually, I mean, it took quite a while after this experience that I had, but my whole experience was Sufi. All of the visions, all the experiences that I had in meditation, the prophets came, everything was like a classical, traditional Sufi training in the unseen. Everything was given in the unseen, I was taught in the unseen, I was shown what was real in the unseen. And after this experience, I started investigating to find out what had happened to me, because I really didn't know. You know, so I looked at Buddhism, and I mean, I knew from my studies that I had gone into a mystical dimension, but I didn't know what the mystical dimension was, because it wasn't a part of my studies. For me to be sitting here with mystics or dervishes, or I mean, if you would have asked me this 10 years ago, I would have said no way. So I actually was so far gone that I actually needed help so that I could integrate again back into this reality. And I found my way to a Sufi sheikh in the Naqshbandi Sufi order, which is the path of silence. It was obvious to me that I was to sit in a path of silence. And so that's how I came to the Sufi path. But it was this door that was opened. It was, you know, a door, a Sufi door, I guess. And so that's where I sit now, sort of.
You know. How is your thirst joyful, or is your longing still sorrowful?
Well, oh, he's asking me if my
thirst
is still
is joyful, or is your longing still sorrowful?
Or is my longing still sorrowful? Sometimes my longing becomes very sorrowful, and I start to cry, and my heart gets very soft, mainly because sometimes I don't understand why I'm still here. You know, I go through this whole thing, well, I did the work, I made the effort, you know, I got home, and what do you mean you get sent back? You know, no one said anything about getting sent back. I mean, you do conscious transition and you're gone. So, and, you know, my life now is, you know, I live alone in the desert, and I still interact sometimes with people, and I work sometimes. But my life is very, very different now from how it was before I had the experience I had. And it was hard this time coming back into this reality, because it was like I was hit with some things that I had never experienced before, which gives a great deal of sorrow, because I don't understand why they exist in this reality either. That they are things that you would have thought that as a collective or a universal that we would have worked it out by now. Simple things like the male and female sitting together in oneness still seems to be a problem in this reality. Or, you know, the patriarch still having a sense of authority over the female. I just don't understand these things anymore. Because in this journey, the male and female come together. There's a union. They're one. And you no longer see male or female as a reality any longer. But here, we still feel and see a difference. And for me, at some point in my understanding, I knew that I was the male as well as the female. Otherwise, there would always be two. I mean, I had to resolve this idea of one some kind of way, and I had lived in the world very much the way a man does. So, you know, there are things like this that still, you know, I grapple with, because I don't understand why we're still working these things out, when I know that most of us know that we're one. You know, that the duality is an illusion. But we are still making distinctions about what is good and what is evil. If all is God, it's God. So why the distinctions still? Or even sometimes the concept of intermediary between you and the divine. There is a direct link. It comes directly into your heart. It's a transmission. All you have to do is say yes. Just open up your heart and it'll come in. But we have all of these structures before this is a possibility for us, all of these practices and things we have to do. And some of us don't have the opportunity to do these practices and the things. I mean, women are in their homes raising their kids, doing a job, have very busy lives, but there isn't any reason the whole time that they're doing all of this that they can't stay in a state of remembrance. And longing, you know, for the presence and the grace to come. And she's there singing, come to me, and, you know, you start making some steps in that direction. And she comes. So yes, there is some sorrow. But it isn't this, I don't have the same longing. Now I long for others to know the grace that comes.
So there's a joy then.
Oh, but you know, my whole unfoldment, there was tremendous joy. Even when I was at the worst moments where, you know, I just was so confused, there was still a part of me that was like, wow, this is happening to me, and it is so beautiful. No one can describe the majesty and the beauty of the whole experience to you. Even in the worst moments, you're just like, wow. You know, there's such an awe of God during, you know, or for me it was. I mean, maybe for other people it isn't, I don't know.
Look at yourself as being part on one side and part on the other side, or do you feel like you're over the edge and on the other side now?
I actually feel that it's one and the same now, that there isn't a one over here and one over here. I think that was part of the integration, that you kind of walk it all into manifestation. I mean, the concept of heaven here on earth or whatever. No, there, I mean, sometimes if I have to go to work or something, I can see that, you know, this side is in this reality and, you know, this side is, you know, still off, and it takes me, you know, a few minutes or an hour or whatever to kind of, okay, I'm at work. But most of the time it's all integrated, and usually, because I live in the desert alone, a lot of times I don't really know what state that I'm in until I actually get in my car and leave the desert. And then I start to go, oh, maybe I shouldn't be driving yet, or did I remember to put clothes on? Oh, I'm going to work. Did I remember what I need for work? Or, but there's something very beautiful in it, in that you tell yourself, okay, for more than 50 years I've been getting up, taking a shower, putting on clean clothes, so I must have done that this morning as well. Even though you can't remember that you did it, and you're not sure that you're really dressed yet, but you get a confidence that I know by the time I get on the main freeway that I'll know that if I'm dressed and if I have to go home and put clothes on. Or not. So, yeah.
Through the experience of vibrations.
Mm-hmm.
What is that all about?
You know, I I don't really know what any of it was about. I would say from my experience that it was a purification. And it took very much the nature of yoga, where I would actually, you know, do something I would think, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of me there recognizing what was happening to me. But at times when my mind would come into whatever experience I was having because I was getting fearful, then I could recognize what was actually happening to me. And I remember once I was just like so twisted and I thought, oh, how am I ever going to get out of this and how did I ever get into it? And when my mind came into it, I actually fell out of the position that I was in. But I would say, I mean, it would be better if you spoke to a yogi about these kinds of things, but I would say for myself, I think it was for myself a purification. That you actually maybe need to prepare this vehicle a bit for when, I mean, the force is really strong when it comes. Or it was for me.
So you said you did yoga to prepare yourself.
No, I'd never done yoga in my life. Yoga did me. I mean, everything did me.
Okay.
The surrender, everything. I just went along for the ride as best I could.
There's a microphone here. I would like to use the microphone if you have questions.
Yeah.